College Football Live is presented by Dr. Pepper.
Welcome to College Game Day.
This pass is going to be picked off. The U finds a way to win it at Lane Stadium.
Big spike, shades of Dan Marino.
25-yarder. Ball game, Texas Tech a winner.
I'm just here so I don't get fined. Nah, I'm messing with you.
Being 1-2, there's pressure building on us.
Michigan fans shocked and disgusted at what they see right now.
Not a good place as a football team right now, and that falls on me.
Welcome in. It's College Football Live. It's the Tuesday edition of College Football Live. I'm Greg McElroy, along with Heisman Trophy winner Desmond Howard. Des, we have had a fantastic season of college football. Only a few weeks and we have a bunch of fantastic matchups to look forward to, including that of America's team, the Indiana Hoosiers, traveling to take on the Ohio State Buckeyes. The Indiana Hoosiers, Des, probably the Cinderella story of the college football season. They're undefeated. What do you know so far about what we've seen from Indiana?
Greg, I thought the Hoosiers, I thought that was a basketball school. What's going on here in the Big Ten, man? You got the Hoosiers out here taking out teams left and right. I tell you what, the thing that most impressed me with the Indiana Hoosiers is just the way that they respond to their coach, Tom Allen. I mean, you can tell that this team, they genuinely love Tom Allen and his staff. I had a chance to talk to Mike Hart, who coaches the running backs. And he just speaks about how these young men, they go out there, they believe in the system, they believe in the culture, and they give 110% all the time. I'm not saying they're the most talented team in the Big Ten. Obviously, that's the team they're about to play Saturday, Ohio State. But the effort that you get from this team, the high level of execution of certain plays, they have short-term memory. If things go bad, they don't linger. It doesn't linger. They don't worry about it. They go right back out there the next play, and they handle their business. So offensively, they got this quarterback, lefty, southpaw, Michael Penix Jr. He's playing very well right now. Dual threat athlete. And so anyway, I can go on and on and on, but they've been the Cinderella story so far of the whole college football season.
I'll tell you this, Des, we called their game last week and I got to listen personal against Michigan State. And look, no one's making Michigan State out to be world beaters. I'm not trying to suggest that, but this was a team right. That capitalizes on every single mistake. When Michigan State gives the ball up, or if they fumble the ball on a third and short, Indiana, they get that inch and they become a ruler. I mean, they capitalize on your mistakes probably as well, if not better, than any team in college football. And they are so good when it comes to forcing turnovers, then also keeping a clean sheet themselves. If you actually look at how they played against Michigan State, that was maybe their worst performance all season in regards to ball security offensively. You referenced Penix. He also has two outstanding wide receivers that you can really trust in Ty Freifogel and, of course, Wap Fillier. Those two big pounding running back in Stevie Scott. That's kind of the recipe that you might need to be able to pull off what would be one of the biggest upsets of the college football season. However, Des, the Buckeyes are for real. We know that. There's no denying how great the Buckeyes are. What have you seen so far from the Buckeyes that has you thinking they're worthy of that 3-touchdown favorite status that they have against another undefeated team in Indiana in the Big Ten?
Well, I guess you could just say they are who we thought they were. You know what I mean? At this point, they're just one of the most dominant teams of college football. Obviously, it starts with Justin Fields. People were very excited to see what Justin Fields would look like in year two under head coach Ryan Day. And, you know, he's been brilliant. I mean, start off the season, Greg, the Nebraska game, I think he was like almost perfect. And it was, I think the one incompletion was a touchdown pass that Chris Olave dropped in the end zone. So, I mean, he came out on fire. He has, he got some weapons around him, though. I mean, they got some talent in Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and some other receivers out there on the perimeter. So this is a very exciting team offensively. They can put up some numbers. They're going to just start to accumulate a bunch of yards, too. But, you know, he's a dual-threat quarterback who we thought he was, who's throwing the ball extremely well down the field. Now, I can talk later about their intermediate passes. I'm not sure he's as sharp when it comes to those passes. And one thing to look at, Greg, when you watch Ohio State, I was watching them against Penn State, and I think Justin Fields gets a lot of credit for passes that are maybe 50-50 balls, but that his receivers, coming from a former receiver, they do an outstanding job of going up, getting these passes, you know, getting these contested, making these contested catches. So he gets like, oh, it's an excellent pass by Justin Fields. And I'm looking like, they're like an excellent catch by the wideout. So pay attention.
Coming from a quarterback, Des, I'm sitting there thinking, man, what a great throw. Like, hey, he fit it in there, tight coverage, right? Not the contested catch. That's to be expected, right? No, you're 100% right. I think what's been special about this group, and we've already seen it from Justin Fields, is the fact that he can use his legs, though, to create separation for his wide receivers. When you have a quarterback that can run the ball, Des, this efficiently, you can't play man coverage against him. Man coverage, which is going to lead to the tight coverage that you just described. The man coverage is because if I'm a defender and I'm playing man-to-man against a wide receiver, where are my eyes? My eyes are on that wide receiver. They're not in the backfield. I'm not worried about quarterback run when I'm in man coverage. So that's been a huge asset to this Ohio State team. He's not having to force it into really tight bang-bang windows because he's getting so much zone coverage against him. You want to blitz him? Fine. Then you get those receivers on islands, and then it's all she wrote. It's game, set, match at that point. So I'm really intrigued to see what Indiana does defensively to try to slow down the rhythm that we're seeing from Ohio State's offense. Because you're right, they're a juggernaut right now. And they need to do what they do, Des. They're going to find themselves in the college football playoff yet again. Which brings us to our next discussion. There's been a lot of debate about the playoffs. If you see the teams in the AP top 10, we're 1 week away, by the way, Des. We're 1 week away from the college football playoffs committee's initial ranking. You see Alabama at one, Notre Dame, the aforementioned Ohio State at three, Indiana, like we talked about, in there in the top 10, along with some group of five darlings in Cincinnati and BYU. Des, there's been speculation. Should we expand the playoff, given the fact that we've seen it in the MLB, we've seen it potentially in the NFL? Would playoff expansion be a good idea in 2020?
You know, Greg, that's a very interesting question. And because of the season that BYU is having and Cincinnati, and I think those teams are just as deserving as some of the other teams, I would love to see either independent or a group of five team like Cincinnati, the Bearcats, get an opportunity to play in the college football playoff. Now, it's hard to sell that the fact that, hey, we need an expansion, which means we need more games, when like last week we got like 15 games canceled or postponed due to COVID-19. So it's kind of a hard sell from that vantage point. But when you look at the competition out there, and if we're able to finish this season in a respective fashion, then I think that, in a respectful fashion, I think that expanding it where BYU and Cincinnati, they get a chance to play, would be very exciting for college football fans all over the country. So this might be the year that you would really do some homework and try to figure out, okay, let me investigate this. Can we expand this college football playoff season this year? Because we got some very, very deserving teams that aren't part of the Power Five that I believe should get a shot.
Yeah, and we've seen in last year, for example, Cincinnati had a chance to play against Ohio State in week number two. We saw BYU go on the road to Tennessee and then beat USC in their hometown. So, like, now that it's gone to conference only, I can understand the reason for expansion in order to accommodate those teams that aren't in the Power Five. But I look at it, and the reality, Dez, is that we already have expansion in the playoff this year. Because if you look at what's going on right now in the Big Ten, let's just assume that chalk flies and Ohio State's playing Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. That becomes a quarterfinal. Same can be said in the ACC. You got Clemson against Notre Dame. In the SEC, you have Florida against Alabama. Those are expansion. That's a 7-team playoff right there, because the winner of each one of those three championship games does punch their ticket to the college football playoff. And then we'll expand more. What about in the Pac-12? We could have Oregon out of the north, who might be undefeated, against SC, who has been playing on thin ice, but they are undefeated at this point of the season. So those two teams play in the Pac-12 championship. That might be a quarterfinal as well. And then as it relates to BYU and Cincinnati, I'd love to see them get a shot. I would. I'd love to see that. But the realities of a group of five team getting in the playoff have always been happens in the Power Five. They might very well find their way in. However, it's going to be exclusively dependent on what happens with the teams at the top of the rankings. Right. When we come back, we will talk about Dez's trophy, the Heisman. It's 2-8 backs, but are there some guys that are off the radar that need to find their way in the discussion? Next on College
Football Live is presented by Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville. Welcome back to College Football Live, presented by Dr. Pepper.
I don't know what else to say except thanks. We're going to football. What a day.
South Carolina parted ways with head coach Will Muschamp on Sunday. This after the Gamecocks' third straight loss, a 59-42 setback to Ole Miss. Muschamp, the former Florida coach in his fifth season at South Carolina. Here's athletic director Ray Tanner on the decision.
A difficult day yesterday for sure, but certainly a lot of bright spots in this program with Coach Muschamp's fingerprints on it. At the end of the day, the expectation is to win games was coming up short. I have a great relationship and respect for what Coach Muschamp did here, and we'll move forward and looking forward to, as we advance the program, and know we're in a better place because of the time that he did spend here.
Tanner added that interim coach Mike Bobo will have a shot at the job. Since Muschamp took over in 2016, South Carolina has struggled offensively. The Gamecocks ranked outside the top 10 of the SEC in points per game, total QBR, and yards per play. The defense, though, struggled as well, allowing 159 points over the last three games, the program's most in any three-game span in the AP poll era. And now for this week's ultimate performance presented by BMW. For the second straight week, it's Florida quarterback Kyle Trask, who threw for 356 yards and six scores in a 63-35 win over Arkansas. Trask, the first Gator QB to throw for six touchdowns in multiple games in a season. And now, as a result, Trask has moved his way into the Heisman race. That's reflected in Vegas. According to Caesars, William Hill, Mac Jones and Justin Fields are tied for the shortest odds to win the Heisman, slightly ahead of Trevor Lawrence and Trask. We are lucky enough, of course, to have a Heisman Trophy winner among us, Desmond Howard. And Des, listen, let's talk about this Heisman race as you see it right now. And clearly, it's just a different kind of year with everything we're dealing with, really everybody.
Yeah, it really is, Wendy. And, I guess the best way to say this is, because it's kind of like an abbreviated season, I have to wait to see who plays how many games and who do they play those games against before I can really sit here and look at candidates as legitimate 1, 2, and 3 on my Heisman ballot. This is an abbreviated season. It's crazy. You know, you look at Trevor Lawrence. The only reason I believe that Trevor Lawrence has slid down to number 3 thus far is because he missed a game. He had COVID-19, and he missed two games. Not only did he miss two games, but he missed that one big game, the Notre Dame game. So I think that's why he slid from being the favorite all the way down to number three. Now, Mac Jones, he missed a big game in name only because they got the LSU game that's been postponed, potentially canceled. It wouldn't be a big game because it's LSU versus Alabama. It would have been a big game for Mac Jones because statistically, Greg, he would have had a monster performance if you've seen LSU's defense play this year. So with that being said, I have some different views about the Heisman candidates this year. I have to really see how this whole thing plays out, and not only who plays X amount of games, but who do they play in those games too, Greg? That's very important to me.
Yeah, it's so funny to me, Tess, because you just referenced Trevor Lawrence. Like, was his Heisman candidacy actually strengthened by the fact that they missed two games, and in those two games, they lost to Notre Dame, and they had an absolute nail-biter against Boston College? Like, shouldn't that benefit your resume because your absence was clearly felt? I think it should. And how do we measure what Justin Fields has done in three games against what Graham Mertz has done in two games, against what Mac Jones has done in six, against what Zach Wilson at BYU has done in eight? Everyone's operating at a different playing field right now. That's why I am relieved that they pushed back the time table on the award. We don't have to submit our votes until the middle of late December. We don't even have to award or announce a Heisman Trophy winner until early January. So I'm pleased that we're making that move, because at this point, any poll that we're putting forth as far as Heisman favorites is completely incomplete.
Well, it is, and therein lies the rub, right, Greg? Everybody's played a different number of games. Everybody's played with different circumstances, but listen, if you had to cast your vote right now, just on the body of work you've seen, with no caveats, where do you land?
Because of how challenging it is to assess the landscape, it has to go to the quarterback. That's where most of the attention is going to be paid. And I actually have a problem with this dating back over the last few years. Now, it's not that any of those quarterbacks that we're talking about, Mac Jones, Kyle Trask, Justin Fields, they're all worthy. That's great. But I've looked back over the last 4 or 5 years, and we have way too many Heisman Trophy voters. There's too many people that aren't really invested in the game day in, day out. They only serve as a voter from a certain region of the country. However, they don't even watch the sport. They look at the box score, they say whose teams are good, and they say, oh, well, he's the best name, he's the biggest name on the best team, he gets my vote, 1, 2, 3. That's not the way it should be. We should have people that are living the sport on a daily basis, that are watching both offensive and defensive players, because there's two guys that jump off the top of my head, Des, over the last few years that were as dominant, if not more dominant, than anybody in the sport. That was Quinnen Williams, a defensive tackle at Alabama a couple years ago, and then Roquan Smith at Georgia a few years ago at middle linebacker. Those two guys were the best players on the field in any one given day, and maybe over the course of an entire season. So until we start to open up the can to consider defensive players, we really aren't necessarily serving the best college football player in any given year.
Well, the first thing I need to say is that I want someone from ESPN social media to clip that part you just said about too many voters and send that to me. I've been saying that, Greg, for years. We have way, way too many Heisman voters out there. You're 100% right. I couldn't agree with you more, and that's a huge problem. Second of all, I do believe we need to start considering other players, but the problem is, they're not being considered. Why? Because like Greg McElroy just said, we have too many voters. They're not really watching the games. They're looking at statistics. They're looking at highlights. And then they're forming their opinions based on, hey, that was on SportsCenter. This is blah, blah, blah. This guy had this many yards. But they're not really looking at the game. If they did, they would understand that a guy like Kyle Pitts, who's a tight end in name or position only, is a guy who you really would strongly consider for the Heisman. You look at these quarterbacks, and you say, okay, there's a guy, you know, Justin Fields. Okay, well, we've seen like a dual threat quarterback before. There's a guy who you probably can compare him to, maybe a Cam Newton. You know, you may look at a Trevor Lawrence. But when you look at a Kyle Pitts, you will really have to wreck your brain trying to remember a tight end that can play the position the way he plays the position. That's how rare and unique Kyle Pitts is as a football player. So I think a tight end like that, who's, you know, a receiver in a tight end's body, and he also blocks. Greg, I spoke to an NFL scout. He said Kyle Pitts plays his position as well, if not better, than any other player in college football, and he blocks Desmond. So you're right, man. I love the fact that you mentioned that too many voters, that's an issue.
I love it, guys. Listen, I'm a college golfer. They say scorecards don't take pictures. That is not the same thing in college football. That is for sure. You got to watch the game. Coming up, our Capital One fan vote. Who's the biggest challenger to Alabama?
College Football Live is presented by Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville.
All right, time to look at the Capital One fan vote, and we ask which unbeaten would be a tougher challenge for number one Alabama, number two Notre Dame, or number three Ohio State. And I will pose the same question to you, Dez. Out of the two undefeated teams, who's the tougher task for the Tide?
I would go with Ohio State because Justin Fields is a dual-threat quarterback. We've seen Ian Book run the ball lately, but those have been gaping holes. I mean, you can pretty much turn around and moonwalk through those holes. When you know Justin Fields is much more of a running threat, and Alabama traditionally have problems with dual-threat quarterbacks who can hurt them with their legs. So, Greg, I would say the Ohio State Buckeyes.
I just think they have more pieces offensively that you have to account for. I think Notre Dame's excellent running the football. I like Skowronek. I think they're decent at wide receiver and getting better. But Ohio State is a nightmare matchup for anybody just because of how many different things you have to try to defend. The quarterback run, the individual matchups on the outside, being able to run the football between the tackles and on the perimeter. So I would say Ohio State's the more difficult team to defend, therefore the more difficult matchup.
Up next for Ohio State, Indiana, of course. The Buckeyes have beaten the Hoosiers 25 straight times. A chance to Indiana to prove they're for real. We'll see. We'll be back at 2 Eastern tomorrow.